When Morag saw one of the Children of Flame walking in her front gate, taking off their gull feather mask and shaking out untidy blonde red locks of hair, all she said was, "That time of year again, is it?" The nomad hesitated, as if trying to remember what to say. It always took a while for old habits of speech to return, Morag noted. When the weather turned and the snow flew, the nomads came down to the villages. Most came in to stay with their families or their villager friends. But even the really hardcore ones, the ones who'd sworn never to set foot in a house again, settled down in the disused chapel by the school and dug in a semi-permanent camp for a few weeks. To show the nomad it was all right, she said, "Go to the kitchen and get yourself warm. I'll just finish feeding the goats and I'll be right with you. There's bread on the counter. Young Cliff's staying with me at the moment, but he's in Zeb's old bedroom. There's plenty of space." Just then Seamus came galloping up, covering the ground swiftly with its six digitigrade legs. "Seamus!" Morag exclaimed involuntarily, thinking the little robot was going for the nomad, even though she couldn't think of any reason why that might be the case, and she wasn't sure which of them she'd put money on to win. But no, Seamus charged out into the road. With an apologetic look at the nomad, Morag followed at a pace better suited to the abilities of a human over 40. She found Seamus in front of Owen's house, placing its skinny body between Owen on the one hand and three of the Children of Flame, in their long, shapeless shirts made of twisted and tied rags, and their feather masks on the other. The broken lump at the front of Seamus's body, which might once have held a camera or a gun, lowered and raised slowly, taking a full sensory account of its surroundings, or maybe trying to find a target. "What's going on?" Morag asked Owen. Owen gestured angrily at the children. "These thieving bastards killed one of my breeding ewes." Now Morag could see the limp white body over to the side. She turned to the children. The shorter one, standing at the front of the trio, spread their hands, or their arms anyway, since one hand still held the long pointed staff that all the children carried. "A mistake. This one." Indicating the taller one at the rear, in the rag shirt that was mostly green, "is young. They thought it was a deer." Which told Morag that Owen had been letting his sheep run free in the forest again, and arguably deserved what he'd got. But still, the nomads should have known better. "You've killed a man's breeding ewe," she said. "That deprives him not only of the ewe, but of her offspring." The nomads spread their hands again. No one can own an animal. Which was true, technically speaking, but there was more to local law than that. "No," Morag agreed, "but Owen has the stewardship of the sheep. He has fed it and housed it and cared for it and has the right to determine its fate, by your rules as well as ours." She emphasized this. The children conferred in a whisper. "Three deer carcasses?" the nomad eventually offered. "Five," Owen's mouth was set in a line, "and they'll be cleaned and dressed." "Four," the nomad said. "All right," Owen conceded. "But they get the sheep," Morag warned. With a scowl and an acknowledging grunt, Owen nodded. "Thieving little wretches," he said to Morag, loud enough for the children to hear as they gathered up the body and headed towards the camp in the chapel. "Now, Owen," Morag said as Seamus abandoned its posture and trotted to her side. "You know we need the children, and they need us." "Just seems like there's other ways," Owen said meaningfully. The incident over, Morag turned back to the road to see her own nomad standing with their mask in their hands. Seamus trotted over to them, gave them the once-over with its sensory array, then trotted back to the farm. "Sorry about that," Morag said. "People are on edge at the moment. It's the third time this week Seamus has dragged me out to stop some fight or other." "Why?" the nomad said, taking a grip on their staff and starting towards the house. "He picks up on these things." The robot had a way of reading human body language that Morag sometimes found slightly unnerving. "There's been trouble. Go on. I'll tell you all about it inside, once I've checked on the goats." The Children of Flame generally didn't share their tribal names with outsiders. So, when they were staying with Morag or their brother Zeb in Penny Groves, people called this one by the name they'd had before they joined the children, which was Casey. When Morag got in from tending the goats, she found Casey with their feet stretched out towards the stove, flanked by two cats, drinking a mug of tea and being brought up to date on local news by Cliff. They started out in Lanfor, we think, the young man was saying. But they've been moving west, taking over land and villages, offering protection in exchange for goods and services. Casey's blue eyes met Morag's grey ones, sharp and questioning. Morag nodded. Feudalism, she said, taking a mug herself from the sideboard and filling it from the teapot. The billionaire disease, Casey replied. They shook their head. What did you see on your circuit? Morag asked Cliff. Cliff was a nomad too, but not one with a tribe. He walked a circuit between the villages on the coast, selling plans for machines he designed, and also selling his own services, building and fixing those machines, which made him a useful vector for information, and gossip too, of course. They're having some success, Cliff said. Farms under their protection. You can spot them. They've got blue and green painted posts out front. He sneered briefly, then covered it automatically with a salesman's bland expression. But Morag hadn't missed that. Gave you trouble? They won't let anyone buy or sell without their official permission. Cliff's bland expression turned rueful. Tried to sell the usual plans, the washing machine, the harvesting drone, got turned down, and eventually got in a fight with their armed thugs. Cliff, I did warn you about going too far. Don't worry, soon as I worked it out, I was off and running back towards Porthmadog. Cliff topped up his mug and offered the pot to Casey. They won't go near there, they're afraid of the Unmutuals. Morag filed this away. The Unmutuals were the nomadic tribe that covered the area around Porthmadog and Port Marion, with some areas of territorial dispute with the Children of Flame. Rumor had it, the original core group had been disgruntled students from the academic community around the archive at Port Marion, but now it was hard to distinguish them from any other nomad group. For outsiders, in any case. Casey sneered, but not in an angry way. The Unmutuals are soft, they said. Hard enough for the blue and greens, Cliff countered, but he was smiling. Morag eyed Cliff critically. He was leaner and more grown-up looking than the last time she'd seen him, with a healing cut on the back of his hand. Still young, though, still learning, still stupid sometimes. And although he had a robot to protect him too, a pack mule he and Morag had repaired together, it didn't have Seamus's deft ability to pick up on body language. I'm surprised the blue and greens got that far, Morag said. Cliff sighed. Isn't that the future, though? He looked out the window at the lake and the low mountains. Either feudalism or nomads, since the end of the billionaires. Casey turned their mug in their hands, looked at Cliff. So long as we've got feudalism, they said in their deep voice, we've still got billionaires. When Morag had first met Casey and Zeb, they'd been tumbling out of a helicopter, two dazed and bewildered children trailing in the wake of their father. A billionaire, from somewhere overseas, who'd bought the big house, more properly, Gwydion Manor, but nobody local called it that, fortified it, and set himself up to wait out the apocalypse. Morag had been one of the local youngsters who'd accepted the offer of employment from the so-called big man to join his armed security force. It had pissed off her father, but there were other enjoyable things about it too. She secretly liked the sense of power in being someone with a uniform and a gun, enjoyed the good pay and being able to take the occasional tin of some exotic food back to her parents. Even if, being a girl, she usually found herself forced into babysitting duties for Casey and Zeb. But then, the food stocks began to run low, and civilization failed to re-establish itself. And Morag's superior officers began to talk in terms of taking over local farms, getting them to provide food and supplies in exchange for protection. Morag had never told Casey and Zeb that she'd been the one who'd taken the restraint programming off the security robots. She was fairly sure they'd guessed eventually. But after the robots had dealt with the big man, the superior officers, and a few other unlikely sorts like the big man's current wife and the chief cook, she'd taken the children by the hands and led them down to the farm, where, bar a couple of nightmares, they'd quickly become just like other village children, even down to the fact that one married the local brewer and the other dropped their pronouns and joined the Children of Flame. Morag joined Casey on the front porch, where they were standing watching the snowflakes fall on the spoil heap behind town. "Are you thinking about your father?" she asked them. "Your father was my father," Casey said. "The man up in the big house was just the sperm donor. You were 10 when he died. That's a lot of time to influence a child. Casey shrugged. We never saw much of him, or her either. Nannies, tutors, babysitters. They smiled at Morag, sharing the joke. I didn't tell you at the time, Morag said slowly, but I got a visit from another survivor of the big house a couple of years ago, not long after I found Siamus on the spoil heap and fixed him up. Who? No one you'd remember, I expect. One of the security force. Kid named Fergal. Anyway, he's now a grown-up doing security for one of these would-be feudalist types. He wanted me to join them. Clearly you didn't agree. Morag's smile turned wicked. I sixed Siamus on him, told Siamus not to kill him, but I think I made my point. Casey smiled too, but said, I wish you'd told us. The children, I mean. When he didn't come back, I stopped worrying about it, Morag said. I suppose I should have told the children, yes, but I thought it was just a one-off experiment, doomed to fail like the big house. Didn't think it might be a trend. Is it the same group? If it is, they're awfully successful. Morag contemplated the snow for a bit. Normally, I wouldn't worry that much. We've always dealt with that sort of thing in the past. What worries me is that people's attitudes might be changing. Casey looked meaningfully over at Owen's farm. Yes, that. If people start thinking they're better off with the billionaires, then that's the danger. Casey was silent for a moment, then said, Fewer of the farmers are letting us into their houses this winter. Any explanation given? Casey shrugged. Not enough resources, some say. Nomads are freeloading, others say. We'd thought it was just a poor harvest this year, but maybe they've been listening to someone. Another of those pauses. It's not all one way either. More of the children are going hardcore. Some of them are saying, What's the point of trading with villagers? We're better on our own. They watched the snow fall. Morag had a feeling it wasn't just the winter cold that brought Casey to her doorstep, but she was also aware that, the way the children's minds worked, it would be tricky to ask. Finally, she said, How's the knees? Bad. They didn't need to say more. Elbows, too, and fingers. Morag nodded once. Arthritis isn't really something you can have while roving around. Casey just looked at her, the question unspoken. Morag nodded again, this time with a small smile. You know that girl of Zeb and Dyes? Maya? The one with the asthma and the knack for doctoring? She's been working on a way of stimulating production of natural steroids through diet and extra doses of herbs. And it works. It's been working for her. She's had fewer attacks lately. Got the idea from some documents at Port Marion. It had been hard getting the archivists to part with them, since they saw their mandate as preserving knowledge during what they considered an age of darkness. But Morag had been persuasive, and she had useful friends. I'll fly a drone over to Penny Grows, get her to send you some with Tom the Pole when he next makes a trip up that way. For a few days, things went as they normally did at the cold time of year. Although, by unspoken mutual consent, Morag, Siamus, Casey and Cliff all stuck together as much as they could. Casey wouldn't say if the remedies from Penny Grows were helping, but Morag took the lack of feedback as an encouraging sign. The visit finally came when Casey was off at some children collective ritual, or maybe a party. Morag was never sure what the difference was with them, and Cliff had gone round the post office to collect some mail drones for fixing. So, Morag, unusually, was alone on the farm. With Siamus, admittedly, but she still wondered if someone hadn't been watching the farm and waiting till the other two left. And coincidence or not, she wasn't too surprised to see who it was. Fergal, she said neutrally, not letting go of the armful of firewood she was bringing in from the shed, but taking a grip on one of the more useful-sized sticks. Beside her, Siamus braced its limbs. Not going to invite me in? He looked the same as he had the last time he'd visited. Lean and red-haired, but with the same bullying grin he'd always had. He had a new scarf, a blue and green one. Morag shook her head. You don't get kitchen privileges. I see you found yourself a new warlord to work for. Of course, it could well have been the mob out by Shrewsbury he'd been with the last time they spoke, but she was hoping not. If it was, then the feudal mindset had gone further than she expected. Fergal shook his head. I am the new warlord. Shrewsbury went sour? Morag wondered if that mob had collapsed, or if he'd walked out on it, or been thrown out. But Fergal avoided the question. Decided things were better out this way. found some like-minded people over in Lintegid. We've been making a success of things. Heard the Unmutuals gave you a hard time, Morag couldn't resist saying. The smile dropped. Nomads don't get a say, Fiergol snapped. What do you think people prefer? Living under tents in the rain, or indoors, in comfort? With you to provide stewardship, like a farmer with sheep. Implicit that the farmer also decides when the sheep die. You seem to think we're oppressors, conquerors, Fiergol said. You've got it wrong. Think about it. Pooling resources means we can afford medical specialists, vets, proper education. What do people do here? Go down the coast to Port Marion and hope that the experts there can maybe give you some ancient document from their archive? If they're feeling friendly that day? We've got ways, Morag said, but he'd hit a nerve. A roar from the gate made her turn. A tall, skinny figure in a feather mask and rag shirt, brandishing a stave. Fiergol started. Seamus, reading the situation, began to advance from the other side. Fiergol started for the road. Just think about it, he said. You know it makes sense. As he disappeared down the road, Casey pulled off their mask. Sorry for the theater, they apologized. It just seemed appropriate. It was, Morag said. The next incursion, there were more of them. A good dozen large, intimidating people, men, Morag noted with some concern about the implications, going door to door, telling the villagers about their community, suggesting it would be a good idea to join. They only got to about 5 houses before their path was blocked. A phalanx of Children of Flame, masks down and staves at the ready, forming a precise line across the street. As always, Morag, who had come out to her gate at the sound of the commotion, marveled detachedly at how they could go from an anarchic mob to a pinpoint accurate military force any time they felt threatened. The town's not yours, one of the children said. Oh, said the leader of the feudalist party diffidently. Is it yours then? The nomad didn't bother with a reply. One of the younger feudalists stepped forward. You're outnumbered, the children's spokesperson warned. I wouldn't try. The leader of the feudalists frowned, but gestured to the too eager one to get back into line. There was a long moment of silence. Morag was reminded of watching her cats fight, the way they would stand there staring at each other for a long time before the yowling and the swiping began. But the feudalists clearly realized they were indeed outnumbered and outmatched, and so, slowly and reluctantly, they began to walk back towards the road out of town. This isn't over, the leader warned. Morag let out her breath, reflected that she'd better tell Seamus to increase the frequency of his patrols for the time being. Then she realized. Seamus was gone. I just think it might be worth a try, Owen said as Ellie handed him a pint of beer over the bar of the Stag's Head. His third, at least, Morag noted. Order, structure, mutual defense. We have order and structure, Naomi, the postmistress, said. As for mutual defense, against who or what? You saw what happened this morning. So in order to fight them off, we should join them. Naomi scoffed into her whiskey. I saw what happened this morning. Yes, the Children of Flame saw them off pretty handily. You'd have us depend on a bunch of nomads? No offense, Casey. Actually, I am offended. Casey had come along at Morag's urging. They were dressed half and half in boots and work coat, but still with the rag shirt visible underneath, and their staff leaned against the bar. We don't have to save your miserable asses, you know. I didn't see you out there on the line. Without us, where would you stay in the winter? Where would you get your doctoring, or even your rags? Owen glared. That's the point. Tom the Pole joined in. He was tall and skinny and Polish and carried a staff like a nomad's, so nobody was entirely sure how he'd got his name. Mutual support. We both get things from each other that make it worth putting up with the aggravation. How's that any different to what the Blue and Greens are offering? Owen demanded. We're paying someone to protect us either way. And with less noise, he couldn't resist adding as an eerie howl floated over from the chapel. Winter solstice coming. Casey remarked sotto voce to Morag. We have to stop the sky wolves from eating the sun. Are you serious? As always. Casey's face was neutral. The nomads are family, Tom said. The people who join the nomads come from here around. Well, that's all right then, Owen said sarcastically. But what about the time they beat up Glynn so badly he needed the doctor? That's my business. Glynn glowered at Owen. and I don't thank you for interfering, and I won't be your illustrative example. Thank you very much. More and more people join the nomads every year, Naomi said, like she was quoting something more than joining in the conversation. And your point? Just that if that's the only two options, feudal or nomad. There's more than one way of being a nomad, Cliff, who'd been uncharacteristically quiet, pointed out. But I've travelled, and I don't like the look of the blue and greens. No one's asking you to join the children, Owen, but think about who you're asking us to get into bed with. Maybe you're right, Owen conceded. But they'll be back, and we need to think about what to do about it. Morag, Casey asked. We'll figure out something. Morag was mostly worried about the fact that Siamus was still missing, and the little robot was still missing 2 days later when the blue and greens returned, this time in the largest numbers Morag had seen, crowding the street that ran through town, bristling with sticks and crossbows and one or two long guns. Fergal striding at their head, wearing a tall hat and a battle dress in squares of blue and green camouflage fabric, Morag wondered where she'd got it. Woven cloth was hard to find outside of the cities, particularly in a complicated pattern like that, but the weave was too thick for it to be from one of the caches of machine-made fabric that sometimes turned up in Liverpool or Manchester. The Children of Flame took up a stance by Morag's farm, maybe because she was friendly to them, maybe because hers marked the end of the village and the beginning of the woods. She heard a noise behind her and saw Casey striding past to join them, fitting their mask over their head. But there were only about 30 children, she thought despairingly, and at least twice as many soldiers, maybe three times. What were they going to do? Fergal knew that and strutted and postured as he went. Despite the genuine threat he posed and her worry about Seamus, Morag couldn't help but feel irritated. Just a bullying kid still. But the problem is, people who were bullied as kids will sometimes just instinctively knuckle under to the bullies as adults. He called his force to a halt just in front of the massed children. You're outnumbered, he said to them. And then, to the villagers, you can do better than depend on a pack of unreliable savages to keep the wolf from the door. There was a murmur, but then Owen, of all people, stepped forward holding. Morag almost had to laugh. A pitchfork. Well, she supposed the clichés had to come from somewhere. That's none of your business, he said. Cliff joined Morag. Where've you been? She asked. Getting Will. He gestured over the shoulder to where his creaky pack mule robot was thumping steadily up the path. Will's not going to be much good in a fight, Morag said dubiously. It can at least stop an arrow or two while we run for shelter, Cliff said. And then, a sound behind the villagers made everyone turn. Morag strained to see. Something was coming along the road from Penny Groves. Cliff gasped. I don't believe it. What don't you believe? Morag said, but the crowd was parting. Coming through was a mass of people carrying long staves, wrapped in simple grey fold-over robes, their faces painted black and white. It's the Unmutuals, he laughed. The Unmutuals have come to provide reinforcements. And at their head, Morag realized, was Seamus, who broke ranks and trotted over to her side, adopting the defense position. You clever thing, she said to the robot, even though it couldn't hear and wouldn't care. Or maybe it would, given what it had just done. I have no idea how you convinced them to come, but thank you. Cliff was frowning. I don't understand. There's only about 30 Unmutuals. And then he fell silent, realizing, as Morag did, that the Unmutuals were just the head of the crowd. Behind them, she recognized villagers from Penny Groves, including Zeb, his husband Di, and a couple of their older children, and people from some of the other nearby towns, and people in the plain long jackets that the archivists at Port Marion wore, and people in the livery of other nomadic tribes. It looked, Morag thought giddily, like half the adult population of the valleys had come. Now you're the outnumbered one, Naomi shouted. A ripple of laughter passed through the crowd. Fergal looked around, turning red with frustration. A few of his own men were beginning to look more than a little doubtful about all this. Without her meaning it, Fergal's eyes met Morag's and suddenly saw an opportunity. The witch with the robot, he sneered, and more loudly, do you know what this woman did? What she did, back at the big house? He paused for effect. She programmed the robots to kill everyone in it, stole their children, and now she walks around with one of those killer robots, bold as anything. That's not true, Morag said. It wasn't. She hadn't programmed the robots to do anything. She'd just set them free. But she was frightened. She'd lived for years without her neighbors knowing what really went down at the big house. She'd told her parents and her older sister, but they hadn't told anyone else. What would the villagers think? Now they knew, and in a way that put the worst possible spin on it. Beside her, she heard Cliff draw in his breath sharply. She felt Seamus braced beside her, heard the shick as its claws slid out. "We'd probably have done the same," Naomi said. "We'd probably have done worse," Owen added. "Some of us have done worse." Tom the Pole came in, softly but grimly. Finding themselves surrounded, the blue and greens began to break ranks and edge away towards the sides of the road. Feargal grandly announced, "Men, move out," as a way of trying to salvage the situation, but they weren't listening to him, and he was forced to trail after them. "What I'd like to know is how Siemus got the Unmutuals to realize something was wrong and come here," Morag said to Cliff. "Symbolism," said a voice behind them. Morag and Cliff both turned, startled. A tall nomad in Unmutual robes stood nearby. "Symbolism?" Morag echoed. "It came into our camp, started laying pieces of stone and broken glass into a pattern. Blue, green, slate. Blue, green, slate. It took us time to figure it out. We even went down to Port Merion to find a semioticist. But eventually we worked out there was blue and green trouble at the old slate mine, which meant either Festiniog or here, and we know the robot has no connection to Festiniog. We picked up the others on the way." "You've started developing abstract communication?" Morag gave Siamis a sharp, if affectionate, look. "I think we're going to have to re-evaluate someone's level of sentience." She glanced over to the disused chapel, where an impromptu open-air gathering seemed to be forming, nomads and villagers and archivists all together. Ellie was walking over from the pub with bottles in her hands. Some of the children were getting up a bonfire. The flames leaped higher with inviting warmth. "But maybe later," Morag said. "You're off again?" Morag only made it a question out of courtesy. The deep cold had broken and the snow was thawing again, and Casey had become less and less verbal in recent days. The nomad shrugged in a generally affirmative way, squatted down so that they were level with Morag, who was on her hands and knees in the polytunnel, repairing a rip in the plastic. "Been talking with the others," they said. "Most of the blue and greens have broken off now, leaving for the south, or joining the children, or the Unmutuals, or the Persons of Hawk Winds. Do they still have enough to keep up their protection racket?" "Not for much longer, the way things are going." Casey watched Morag work. "Do you ever think about it? Joining the children?" "Not everyone's cut out for that kind of life," Morag said. "And here we've got balance. The villagers need the nomads, yes, but the nomads need the villagers too. Everybody takes care of everybody else, and nobody gets eaten. How's your knees?" "Not bad," Casey said. They squatted down on their heels to be level with Morag, to make the point. "Not as good as they were once, but they'll do for walking on. Keep to that diet and you'll be fine. And how's your secret?" "Nothing's really changed," Morag said. "It's a relief, really. All these years I'd been worrying what the neighbors would think. But Tom the Pole was right. We've all done awful things. I'm sure I haven't got the worst past in the village." "And that's why nobody ever asked," Casey said. Morag stopped, stared at him. "You're right," she said wonderingly. "You're right. That was how you coped with awful secrets. You just assumed everyone else had one and didn't ask them to tell, unless they wanted to. And that," she thought, "was what had really turned them against Feargal. Not the feudalism, though that helped. The fact that he'd broken her confidence." She turned back to the tunnel. "Cliff will leave too, once the weather's a bit better. He has to stick to the roads, so he needs them to be reasonably clear." The nomads stood, put on their mask. "We'll watch out for him." "See that you do," Morag said. She watched them go up the path until they disappeared into the woods beyond the village.